Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Scott eVest. Great clothing plus tons of pockets for your stuff. That's Scott eVest. To learn more and get a super special Scott eVest deal, go to jimharold.com/vest. That's jimharold.com/vest. Click on the link I provide there and use the coupon code JimHarold. That's one word, Jim Harold, and you'll get 20% off your purchase. Thanks, Scott eVest.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. It's been a red letter week around the spooky studio. Had a chance to be on the great Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie as a guest and got a lot of good reaction off of that. So if you happen to be tuning into this and you're a Coastie, welcome. Good to have you. I hope you'll enjoy the show. Also, I should say for the next couple of days, I'm recording this a little late on Friday, September 30th, we will have the Campfire 5 book, my new Campfire 5 book. That is on sale, and I'm feeling in a generous mood, so I'm going to keep that on sale through Monday. That's through Monday for only 99 cents on the Kindle if you're in the States. If you're in Britain, on Amazon for 99 pence. And if you're somewhere else, just check your Amazon store. It should reflect a sale price, but your results may vary. But in the US and UK, definitely on deep discount, and the price will go up Tuesday morning Eastern time. So please do check into that if you're listening to this before Monday or before Tuesday. Go over to Amazon and sign up. It's ranked as high as something like 710 in the Kindle store overall. It's already hit the number one supernatural Kindle bestseller status, so we're very thankful. 70 more stories, and you can read the books in any order, so do not concern yourself. You could start with 5, and then if you like what you read, you can go back to one of the previous books, 1 through 4. And we appreciate your consideration and hope you'll help make it a mega hit. And also, if you've read it and like it, please do review it. And now, with no further ado, we are going to get on to what you came here for, and that would be campfire stories. And here they are. Another new listener, Sarah from Illinois, is on the line, and she's just been listening for a couple of weeks now, but she's anxious to get on the show, and we appreciate it. So glad to have her here. Now, she has a couple of neat stories because they surround one of the most haunted places in the United States, that is the Queen Mary. Yeah. And we're so glad to have her on the line, Sarah from Illinois. Please do tell us what happened.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me, Jim. My story happened about 10 years ago. I was 13 years old, and my parents decided to take me on a California vacation, and I convinced them that that had to include the Queen Mary. I had seen probably about, 20 episodes of Ghost Hunters, so I thought I was a bona fide ghost.
There you
hunter.
Go.
I was really ready to take on this haunted World War II medical ship. So we got there and I was not at all scared, just so excited. And the first thing that we did is my father and I, we went to investigate the infirmary. And again, this is about 10 years ago, but I remember it pretty clearly, walking down into the infirmary and there was a big plaque on the side of the wall that had every person that had died on the ship, their names and their cause of death. Yeah. And I remember seeing there was about maybe 7 to 10 people from 1960 on that just said cause of death, unknown, 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 unknown. So that's when I started to get a little bit scared. And I walked into this room that was like a recreation of what a medical room would have looked like back in the day. And it was pristine, clean, white, totally sterile, little porthole on the wall, small twin bed. And I took one step in and I didn't see anything, but it felt as if there was someone on the edge of the bed, hunched over and looking up at me and glaring at me.
Oh my.
And it was so just absolutely all-encompassing, terrifying for me that I just couldn't move because whatever was there was so upset and irritated that I was coming into their space. And once I snapped out of it, I ran back upstairs. That's when I really started to get even more freaked out. So we took the ghost tour. We went all through the haunted pool, the haunted showers that are allegedly supposed to be the portal for all the spirits on the ship, and did all the fun stuff. And then finally that night, I dragged my mother out to ghost hunt the ship at night. And my mother is up for anything. She's an adventurous lady, but she's a bit of a skeptic. So she was really trying to get me to do things that I thought were really, oh gosh, we can't do that. Like go into the boiler room and go to these like super haunted places. Like, let's do it. Let's find out what happens. No, no, no. I'm the expert here. I'm 13. I have this covered. So we went to this long hallway that's supposedly haunted by a little girl.
Right.
And I remember I handed my little EVP tape recorder to my mother and I went off and started taking some pictures. And my mother made a comment, I think this is the hallway that's haunted by that little girl. And I responded, just mumbling from about 10 feet away, because at this point, I'm getting upset that I'm not seeing anything. I'm 13 years old and I want it right now.
Right.
So we get to this stairwell and I start doing what I think I'm totally allowed and willing and able to do as a bona fide ghost hunter. I start berating whatever is there,
horrible.
It's a terrible idea. And I just start saying things like, well, maybe you don't even know that you're dead, and all this terrible 13-year-old ridiculous things. And my poor mother is getting tired. She's standing there like, somebody just pull her hair or like push her or something so we can go to bed. Like, let's end this. So as I'm saying all these things, I'm taking pictures and tiny little orbs start popping up in my pictures. And as I start saying more things, they get bigger and there's more of them. And I go and take a picture of the stairwell and everything is normal, except right in the middle, it's like two or three shades darker, as if it's a black figure coming down the stairs.
Ooh.
And I see that in my little digital camera screen. I'm like, okay, it's time to go to bed. That's it. I'm done. We go back to the hotel room. I sleep face down in the couch, the farthest away from the door that I can. My poor mother has to sleep in this little bed that was supposed to be for me. Her pillow is literally right under the door handle out into the hallway of the hotel. So she goes to bed and wakes up in the middle of the night and hears four running steps, like bump, 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 bump.
Mm.
And nothing before and nothing after. And she's trying not to let it freak her out. She's trying to go back to sleep. She's getting back to sleep. And she wakes up a couple minutes later and hears something moving. And she looks up and the door handle that's right above her head is moving as if someone outside the door is trying to turn it and trying to get in.
Oh, boy.
And there's no, whoops, wrong door. There's no footsteps walking away. It just turns for about 30 seconds and then that's it. So we left the hotel extremely early the next morning. We were all pretty freaked out. We left. We went home. I'm back in Illinois, and I'm listening to my tape recorder because I was an only child. I tape recorded my witty banter throughout the whole trip, and I get to the point where we're on the ship, and it's just me and my mom in this hallway that was supposed to be haunted by a little girl. And right in between where my mother says, oh, I think this is the long hallway, and I mumble some response.
Right.
There's a little girl voice that whispers, go back home.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Now, let me ask you. Now, you wanted to see something. You wanted to experience something. At that point, were you glad that you experienced it? Or you're kind of like, I wish I wouldn't have dabbled in all this.
I think it was both. You know, I think I was, I remember because I was all alone when I was listening to this tape recorder. I threw it against the wall, locked my door, ran up. I was under my covers for a good 20 minutes, but I was so excited because I felt like I had evidence, and that has sort of, you know, really made me excited about exploring that side of the universe. Even now, you know, 10 years later. So I'm kind of glad because it was my first encounter with ghosts or the paranormal, and I wasn't discouraged by it. I was only encouraged.
Now I have to ask you this. You said your mom was a skeptic. Did this turn her around?
It definitely made her way less of a skeptic. She was terrified when that door handle was moving above her head. Yeah, she felt something was off throughout the whole ship, and I think she definitely believes a little bit more now.
Wow. Well, I know you have other stories, and you're going to come back on the show, hopefully, to share those with us. But, Sarah, I would like to thank you for coming on the Campfire and telling us your story about the haunted Queen Mary.
Of course. Thank you so much, Jim.
On the campfire, some of my favorite stories are not necessarily ghost stories. They're what I call head scratchers. Now, Gary from San Diego definitely has a head scratcher. He's been listening a couple of years. So glad to have him on the program. Gary, tell us what happened with his head scratcher.
I tell you, it's something else. Back in 2007, I took a promotion and I was moved from San Diego to Cincinnati. And I had a son in high school at the time, so I thought it'd be a great idea. I drove my motorhome out to Cincinnati and lived in a motorhome for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a few unfortunate weather events, and I ended up living in a hotel for a while. So while I was in the hotel, my daughter had come to visit, and she was actually sleeping in a recliner at the time. And I thought it would be a good time to have somebody else with me to go work on the motorhome. See if we could fix the freeze problems we had.
Right.
And, she wanted to go to breakfast. So I took her to breakfast and went to go pay for it with my ATM card. And I thought I'd get my license out at the same time because sometimes you want to see it. And put it back in my wallet, put my wallet in my jacket pocket, went to get on the freeway. And my door was open to my truck a little bit. I thought, well, I'll close the door. No big deal. And we got up to where my motorhome was, and all of a sudden I get a call from the Sharonsville Police Department. They're saying, hey, we found a bunch of your credit cards spread all over the on-ramp to the freeway.
Oh, my.
And I thought, yeah. I thought, oh, boy, okay. So I start looking for my wallet. I can't find it. It's gone. Okay, well, we're not working today. We need to go take care of this. So I went down to the police department. And the biggest cop I've ever seen, this guy was a giant, meets me at the door. And he's got this bag, and it's got a bunch of credit cards and my wallet in it. I'm like, yep, that's mine. He goes, well, we found one of your business cards in your wallet, and that's how we called you. I'm like, okay, great. I'm looking through everything. I said, you didn't happen to find my driver's license, did you? He goes, no, there was no driver's license there. I said, well, you know, I asked him exactly where he found it. So my daughter and I drove to the on-ramp. We mm-hmm. walked back and forth in both directions for a couple hundred yards, didn't see anything. I'm thinking, oh, great. So I'm halfway across the country, don't have a driver's license, can't get back to get another one. I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. So I just said, you know what, we're not doing anything for a couple of days. We went to Dave and Buster's, actually, to kind of just relax a little bit and get – I was pretty stressed out.
Sure.
So 2 days go by. I drive to work with no driver's license. Don't tell the cops that, but I did. And my daughter's still with me because it's actually my birthday. And I wake up, and the place we're staying had a little kitchen in it too. And I mean, we'd gone through that motel. We drugged everything out looking for that license. It was not there. We cleaned everything out, got everything. I wake up that morning, walk into the kitchen, and there in the very middle of the kitchen floor, I mean, perfectly centered, too, it's a weird thing, is my driver's license face up.
How strange.
Yeah. You know, I'm getting goose pimples right now even talking about it. But, you know, and then what was really weird was a year later, that movie Paranormal Activity came out.
Yeah.
And I'm watching that, and in the middle of that, her keys are gone, and they're found right in the middle of the kitchen floor, directly in the center.
Wow. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think maybe it was somebody looking out for you from the other side, like a guardian angel saying, hey, Gary, you dropped this. Do you think it was something like that?
Absolutely. There was more. I mean, there were things happening while I was out there. There were a lot of things happening when I was out there, and there's a lot of things telling me I shouldn't have taken that job in the first place, but you know, I was frustrated to the point where I just, you know, hey, if I'm supposed to get out of here, give me a sign. And then poof, here's my license right in the middle of my kitchen floor. It just didn't make any sense. And, you know, my daughter was sleeping there. We never heard anybody come in. It's not like it could have. And it was a good half mile from the on-ramp where everything fell out.
Right. Huh.
There were other things that happened there while I was there that made me think that, you know, hey, maybe I shouldn't have been there. But at the time, it all seemed like a great plan.
And after the finding the driver's license, was that in any way a kind of turning point?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. After that, it was kind of funny. Another one where I happened to be looking on my computer and ended up sending a resume to a company and got a call back 5 minutes later. It was an old friend of mine. And well, 2 weeks later, I was back in California working as a consultant.
There you have it.
it all fell together just amazingly to get me back. And then things have changed drastically since then. But
now you're mentioning these other strange things happened. Tell us about some of these strange things.
Well, I worked for a large company there in Cincinnati. It was a very old site. And it actually was the very first day in the office. And I've got it was quite a large office. And I'm sitting behind my desk and there's a window that actually looks out into an alleyway. And it's a good 17 feet off the ground. And I see not just out of the corner of my eye, but I'd say, you know, the last quarter of my eyesight, I see this dark figure drop down from the top of the window, like it's peeking in. And then as soon as I turned my head, it popped up. And I saw that twice in a row within about 5 minutes. And I thought, this is the strangest thing I've ever seen. I mean, I've heard about shadow people before, but I thought, out of the corner of your eye things, but this was a good quarter of my eyesight I saw it in. And it wasn't scary. It was more shocking than anything else.
And do you think, go ahead.
Oh, I went to the window at that time. It was like that first day in the office. I looked down. It's a good 17 feet to the ground. I thought maybe somebody was outside the window playing a joke on me.
Now, do you think that this was connected with the driver's license thing? Do you think it was a part of a larger phenomena going on?
Oh, absolutely. There were so many things like that. Little things that added up. It's funny. One of the guys at work, one of the guys who worked for me, I was telling him about that. He said, well, you need to get some salt and put some salt around your motorhome. Put a line of salt around because there's something after you. And I thought, oh, come on. There's no such thing. But, maybe I should have invested in some salt.
Yeah, but very interesting. It sounds like all's well that ends well. Gary, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Scott eVest. Great clothing plus tons of pockets for your stuff. Well, that's Scott eVest. And we even have a great deal for you that I'll tell you about in a minute. Now, fall is in the air, and it's a great time to get introduced to Scott eVest. Now, what is a Scott eVest? Now, they're not just vests. They're all different kinds of clothing, jackets, coats, pants. And the idea is simple. I don't know about you, but I carry around more gadgets and wires and things these days than ever before. And I never have any place to put them. Well, I did not have any place to put them until I found out about Scott eVest. I have several of their products. I've got their Quest vest. I've got their lightweight vest for the summertime. It really is a fantastic, fantastic company. They're always coming out with new things. In fact, they've got their new OTG jacket. It stands for off the grid. And it has, for example, 29 engineered pockets. But the cool thing about Scott eVest is you'd never know. They're engineered in such a way that you still look fashionable, you still look sleek, but you've got a place to put everything. Your headphones, your phone, your tablet, passports, wallets, water bottles, and it's all contained within your clothing. And everybody's none the wiser. It's a very streamlined way to travel, for example. You don't have to have all these crazy bags. And you can even, in some of the different vests, the OTG, for example, the off-the-grid jacket, you can hold a full-size laptop. I mean, it is a great thing. And I'm not just the only one saying it. Steve Wozniak is a fan. I believe he's actually on the board, if I'm not mistaken. Plus, they have a whole list of Hollywood influencers who love it. And in fact, they put me on that list. And I'm kind of like, well, wait a minute. I'm looking at some of these big names here, Wozniak and many stars of stage and screen. And I'm like, well, little old me, but I'm very thankful. And I love Scott eVest. Now, I've got a deal for you. And you got to check this out. We've had people say, I've given these as gifts. They love them. It's unique. It's something different. It's something great. You can get 20% off your Scott E. Vest purchase. Your Scott E. Vest purchase, if I could speak. Go to jimherald.com/vest. That's jimherald.com/vest. Click on the link that I give you over there and use the coupon code JimHerald, and you'll get 20% off your purchase. What a deal. Discover the power of pockets. Go to jimherald.com/vest. Click on the link and use the coupon code JimHerald. That's one word. And you'll get 20% off your purchase. Thanks, Scott Evest. Jackie joins us from California. She's a new Plus Club member. Been listening for several months, active on our virtual campfire page. And she's going to talk about the last 17 years in her home and a series of strange experiences that have happened. Jackie, welcome to the program. Thanks for your support. And tell us what's going on.
Well, thank you. Well, I have always noticed some kind of weird things around me. I think I noticed it first when I was living in my old home before this prior house. Noticed some weird, weird stuff. Things I couldn't describe, like as a little kid. And having like nightmares of them for years. And then I eventually moved into this current house that I'm at. And I've been here for like 17 years now, like you said. And at first I thought maybe it was just me losing my mind. Like, okay, I'm just making this all up in my head. And then I started noticing my brothers were starting to notice. And I mean, we're talking anything from hearing people walking around in the house and like to the point to where we would be home alone and I'd have to call my parents and be like, somebody's in the house. I mean, to that point. So not just like randomly, like, okay, whatever. I mean, we were that scared that we ran out of the house and had to call my parents. And of course, nothing was there. I've had things from things falling, like not just falling, but flying, you know, and I'm very, I really try to look at everything like scientifically. You know, like I would try to debunk everything over and over, just impossible. Then it started to get to the point where I noticed things were starting to get, I guess I don't want to say more aggressive because that's the wrong word. I would just say more prominent. And I've always heard of things, like eventually got like kind of want to understand what was going on. So I started doing research and stuff. And, you know, I've heard things from, like people would be at in their houses and they would step out of the kitchen for 1 second, turn back around and their whole kitchen would be thrashed, but they wouldn't hear any noise. And that, you know, was like that had happened to me in my bedroom. It was Christmas time and I had a table laid out trying to learn how to wrap gifts. Okay. Cause I was like a little kid and I have a dresser who it's pretty tall and it's got all these levels and everything. It's very sturdy. It's up against the wall. It's pretty heavy and it can't just not fall over. I mean, somebody would have to really knock it over and it's got all these little knickknacks on it. And so my house is small. So we can hear a mouse fart in this house and everybody can hear it. Seriously. So I woke up in the morning and the whole entire dresser had totally fallen over, not just like fallen, like crashed, broke the table in half. Completely like enfolded this chair into like a million pieces. Everything that was on these shelves, like these little porcelain figurines and stuff, were shattered. I mean, I had a boombox that was just broken. I mean, that's how hard this fell, and nobody heard it. And this fell about 2 feet from my head.
Oh my, that's scary. And then I was looking. You were sharing some things with us when you sent over the note, and you talked about something your nephew saw. Tell us about your nephew. These kind of things fascinate me.
Yeah, well, we noticed, at first, again, the same thing. I thought it was just me. I thought I always felt like sitting in the living room, there's a hallway very close to us. And I always felt like maybe there was an older gentleman just standing there, staring and watching. Always. I don't know why I've always felt like it's a gentleman. Don't know why I always felt like it's an older gentleman. And then I've had people come over to the house and say the same thing, like, why do I feel like somebody's watching us? And I'd be like, no, it's just us in the house, you know,
Ryan.
Try not to freak out my friends and like scare them off. And I would babysit my nephew one time and he was, I think like 3 or 4. So he could talk and he could comprehend like things, you know, and we were in that hallway and it was just him and I was trying to walk him to the toy room. And he points up at an angle, like as if somebody was standing in front of him and they were taller than him. And, but there's nothing there, nothing, mind you, just the hallway. And he points up and he goes, "Who's that? Who's that guy? Who's that gentleman?" Over and over. And he's like prominent, like, "Who is this dude?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's nothing, buddy. It's just nothing, you know, just trying to keep on walking. 'Cause now I'm getting all freaked out, you know, and that doesn't look good. I'm going to freak out and he's going to freak out." And that's just not the only time he's done that. He's done it before. Like, I think he did it probably about two more times, and he did it in, it's like a T-shaped hallway. Mm-hmm. So he's done it in like two other areas in just in that hallway. He won't do it anywhere else. And he's pointing up at an angle. Like, he's not pointing at a picture, nothing.
Now you and you go ahead.
I was just saying, and it's just, you know, it's just ironic that, you know, we've had those feelings of somebody being in that hallway, and you know, he kind of senses it as well, I suppose.
Now, you told a story, would seem kind of like the capper to me, the evening that your friend came over. Tell us about that, because again, it's not just you now, it's you and somebody else.
Yeah, this was a good friend of mine who's actually like my adopted sister, and she is a psychologist. So she's very, I don't want to say like anti-paranormal, because it's not true. I think she's very spiritual, but she's just very logical like I am. And she finally, I convinced her to finally come over to my house. For some reason, she just never kind of wanted to. I mean, we had been friends for like, by this point, about 8 years. She finally came over, and we were sleeping in my room, sharing the same bed or whatever, and the bed's up against the wall. So she was sleeping on the inside up against the wall, and I'm on the outside. I always like to sleep with the TV on, because ever since living in this house, I can't sleep in the dark. But she likes the dark, so I gave her the respect, and I turned off the TV. And it was about, I'd say like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, and she's smacking me like over and over, and I'm in a dead sleep, and she's smacking me, screaming at me, you know, Jackie, wake up. And I'm like, what? And she's all, "Something is on top of my legs and it is crawling on top of me." And I mean, she's hysterical. And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" She's all, "Something is on my legs. Turn on the TV, you know, so we could have some light." And I'm like trying to just put these pieces together in my head. And I kind of try to sit up to reach for the remote. And then all of a sudden I feel, I can't say claws because this was much sharper than like claws. It felt like knives. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like knives, and it felt like somebody were digging them over and over on the bottom of my feet because I was barefoot. And then it crept up from like the bottom of my heel up my foot and over the top of my foot and was starting to spread up my legs. And it felt like hands, like two separate hands. And by this point, now I'm freaking out. We're both screaming. We're both hysterical.
Sure.
She's screaming. I mean, somebody's like on top of her in her mind. So I turn on the TV, and as soon as the light illuminates the bedroom, everything stopped instantly.
Huh.
Everything. And when I look, you know, I kind of lean over, turn on the light, got a little lamp next to my bed. And sure enough, on top of her, between her legs on both sides, are like these knees and leg marks, like somebody was on their knees. Like you can see the indention and the line, like, and how it would go down skinnier towards the ankles and everything. Of course, I can't say that might not necessarily be it, but I thought it was kind of ironic. And then I looked at my legs and ankles, which felt sharp enough to definitely draw blood. I mean, it was painful, but there wasn't a scratch. Wow. And the rest of the night, we were freaked out and just slept with the TV on, and she's never came back to my house ever again.
So what do you think is going on at your house? What do you think it is?
You know, I have no clue. And that's the God honest truth. I've kind of tried to do like a little Google search, you know, of course, Google's like everybody's best friend. Couldn't find much. My house isn't very old, but of course the land could be old. I do know that around my town and the town over, I know the Donna Party has come through. And the town over that is literally like 2 minutes away is extremely haunted. And now there's always been rumors that the Donna Party has been all throughout here. And so I could imagine there's some sort of nasty energy. I don't know. And then that's like a big thing out here. So whenever there's like some juju going on, people like always go, don't party kind of thing. I don't necessarily think that. I don't know. But I think it's ironic that I have kind of felt this stuff multiple times in my life. So I don't know, maybe I'm sort of sensitive. Who knows? Or maybe they just like to pick on me. I don't know. But I've never felt really threatened until that one moment.
Well, certainly it would be worth feeling threatened about. That is frightening, and we wish you the best with it. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us on the campfire, for supporting us and being a part of our virtual campfire over on Facebook. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Next up on the campfire is Jimmy. He actually found us on Twitter. Somebody tweeted out that they were listening to the show. He checked it out and has been listening for about a year. And interesting, Jimmy is a fairly new homeowner. But we're going to find out about this home and how it all worked out and how some weirdness ensued. Jimmy, welcome to the program. Tell us about this house purchase.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Well, my wife and I were looking for a house. We live in Northern California in a town called Chico, which is about 2 hours north of Sacramento for people who are unfamiliar. And we just kind of happened upon this house. It came up on Zillow one day, and it was really low price for the area. So we decided to go check it out. And we kind of just drove up on it, and it was like a gym compared to the houses around. It was nice. It was in the area we wanted to be in. And it was like really, really well priced, which, in my opinion, now that I look back, should have been like a red flag. Like, what's going on? What's wrong with it? You know, we had the house inspection. There's nothing wrong with it. So we just kind of jump on the opportunity to get it. And, we moved in. It was me and my daughter, my wife, and our sister-in-law at the time. And, you know, we just kind of were going through the motions of making a house a home, you know, painting and taking down walls and stuff like that where we could, and really making it just kind of a place we wanted to live. One thing that kind of struck us odd is our daughter. We were doing like most of the renovations on her room, painting it and, you know, taking down closet doors and putting stuff up. And,
right.
And we put up a shelf in the corner. And while I was doing that, I noticed there was like a little hole in the ceiling, kind of looked like where there would be a cutaway up access to an attic. But our roof had was flat. So I kind of just peeked up there and I just saw, you know, 4x4 or 2x4s with, you know, writing and stuff that I just kind of glanced at the time, didn't think anything of, and just kind of closed the cover and, you know, went along with my business.
Right.
And that'll come into play in a little bit, because after that, my daughter started having these, I don't know if they're attacks or what, but she started having these fits at night, and she would, you know, scream and cry, and we couldn't get her to just stay in that room. And, one of the times I went in there, I was like, well, you know, what is the issue? And she points straight up at that corner. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of ominous. And, you know, and we started asking her about what's going on. She started saying that Charlie was in her room. Charlie was in her room. She kept saying Charlie over and over and over again. And she's three. So, you know, they say younger kids are perceptive to this kind of stuff. So I didn't doubt her or anything. I just, you know, didn't really think that it was too much of a, you know, too big of a deal. But you know, we just kept on going on with our lives, and she, the only time we could ever get her to stay in the room is if she fell asleep with us on the couch or something. We put her in the room, but if she woke up in the middle of the night, she would just come streaming out of there, crying, screaming, and she would run all the way down the house, and our rooms were right next to each other. And I'd hear her scream, and I'd run down the hall and I'd grab her, and she would say stuff, Charlie, Charlie, Charlie. And I was like, okay, well, come sleep with us. And it got to the point where we didn't even let her sleep in her room. It would just, I work at 4 a.m. And so her running down the hall is just precious moments for me to sleep at night, you know? So, my wife and I started noticing, bumps and creaks and things in the house. And it was a split level house. So, you know, that was kind of normal to us because it, there's a foundation and then there's a level that's built up on top of the foundation. And that's where, you know, the HVAC and everything was run under. And so we just kind of thought it was normal, but it got really, really frequent. Like we would hear bumps and scratches and things. And it got to the point where my sister-in-law started hearing scratches on her window in the front door, in the front of the house, excuse me, which was right by the front door. And there'd not be anything out there. And it just started freaking us out quite a bit, but it all came to kind of a pinnacle one day. And my sister-in-law calls my wife and I on the phone, and she was in just a room over, and she says that she hears someone walking down the house. And then she starts screaming because she says she sees someone in the backyard. And so I go out there and there's nothing out there. I call the cops. I call everything. The cops are just kind of like giving me the once over, like, you know, what is this guy talking about? You know,
huh.
I'm sitting there and my boxer is like trying to, you know, chase this guy out of my backyard. And there's nothing there. And it kind of floored me because I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Well, that's a natural reaction, I would think.
I would hope so, but the cops, they gave me such a crazy look. Like this guy, I'm a big dude with a big beard. Like I'm kind of scary looking there. I'm sitting there in my underwear scared, you know, you know, what is this guy thinking? You know, what kind of drugs is he on or whatever? I couldn't tell
right.
what they were thinking, but
right.
that's what I thought. In June, we started looking for a new house cause my wife got promoted. So we're going through packing and everything back up. It was a real quick stay in that house and it just kind of worked out. But it started to rain a lot in May, June. And one thing, it was just really creepy because we're all asleep and my sister-in-law was kind of a night owl and she calls us on the phone again. So obviously a red flag there. And she tells us that the garage door was open, and it was, I'm only one that has a clicker for the garage door. So I know I didn't open it because it's in my car, and I know she didn't open it because why would she call us if she had just opened up the garage door? So I'm starting to freak out a little bit because it's just, everything is just falling into place for like a, I hate to say it, but like a stereotypical kind of haunting, you know,
right.
weird things happening and stuff. So I walk through our kitchen. We have to walk through the kitchen to get to the garage. And as I'm going out there, I grab the biggest knife I can find. I'm like, what is going on? And so the garage door is open. It's pouring outside. But one thing that I didn't see, which would have been, you know, it should have been there, was there was no dripping from the garage door and no rain was breaking the threshold. So, and it was pretty windy. So there should have at least been water in the garage door. So, you know, it was kind of perplexed because it's like this is so weird. So I go out and I'm, you know, in my boxers again, out in the middle of the rain with this kitchen knife, looking in my cars, making sure there's, you know, no one in my car, you know, making sure the garage door opener is still there and everything's still there. And I walk out into the middle of the street and I walk in back down the alley behind our house and there's nothing there. So I'm like, okay, well that's weird. And I just go inside and what I did is I closed the garage door manually and then I pulled the lock and I locked it on the side. And I distinctly remembering this because it was such a labor intensive thing to do. You know, I had to get the stool out and climb up and undo everything. And so I just go back inside and I wake up in the morning and I'm just walking out the front door because I don't want to mess with having to re-engage the garage door or anything. And I'm going to get in my car and the garage door is open again. And I told my wife, I texted my wife, I was like, did you open it? She says, no. You know, so I'm just thinking about it right now. I'm still perplexed. I don't know how it happened because I pulled the garage door back down and it was still disengaged. And the lock, the only thing that had been unlocked was the kind of metal bar you put through the side of the track. And that
right.
was undone again. But the other was still done. And I didn't know what was going on. So the other thing, sorry, I wrote down some notes so I didn't forget anything, so I'm looking at them. But okay, so we were going through the moving and everything and painting and everything. And so by this time we had transitioned into the new house down in Sacramento is where we ended up transitioning to. And so we were painting walls and all kinds of stuff, and we were hearing all these bumps and stuff still. But I was the only one staying in the house at that point. And so, because I was still working in Chico, and one night, it's the last night I stayed in there. I'm on an air mattress, you know, in the middle of the living room.
Right.
There's new paint and everything. And I wake up at 4 to go to work. I'm still kind of in a dazed state, but I look up and I definitely see a handprint on the wall. And I don't know if that was me or anything, but I definitely did not stay long enough to find out. I packed up my stuff and took out as soon as possible.
Oh my.
And, it was really crazy. And the thing that took it to the most extreme was that, my wife and I went up there to fill up, you know, finish paperwork and everything. And we're in the front yard grabbing our mail, and a white car drives by, and they stop and they're talking to my wife. And, it turns out it was a tenant to the house prior to us moving in.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks us, you know, why we're moving and everything. You know, we tell her promotion and everything. We don't mention anything about the occurrences. And then she just says to us, well, did you meet Charlie?
Ooh.
Yeah. And it scared us so bad because, you know, everything kind of made sense. Like a short sale, get in the house real quick, low price, it's because someone got scared out of the house.
Yeah, it makes sense. And your daughter claimed someone named Charlie was there too, right?
Right, yeah. That's the reason she wouldn't stay in her room. And my wife and I were just talking about it today because I told her about, you know, being on the show and stuff. And she was like, that is so crazy. She was like, I didn't know half that stuff happened. But, you know, my daughter is just so receptive. And I like to think I'm pretty receptive to that too. So I don't know if it's something that's kind of just transferred down to her.
Now, here's a quick question. Were any feeling or any thought, or did you, I mean, at some point you might just want to wash your hands of it and say, I don't care. I'm done with it. I'm on to Sacramento. But did you ever look into who or have any idea who Charlie might have been?
No idea. And that was a lot of comments I got from the people on the Facebook page was, you know, you should look into it. But I just kind of wanted to wash my hands of it. It was just such an experience. And you know, I drove by the house recently and there's people moved in there, but I'm not going to, you know, tempt it and go say, hey, did you hear about this that was going on? But the house is relative, you know, it was built in 1979. I didn't hear of any kind of crazy occurrences. And if there was any kind of murder or anything, it should have been, you know, divulged to us, and it wasn't.
Sure. Well, Jimmy, thank you for introducing us to Charlie. And we thank you for listening and being a part of the campfire.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, the caller who needs no introduction, I'm talking about Travis from California. He's been on the show many times, as if you've been listening, you know. And he's starting to get a fan club, I think. So we're so glad to have him back on the show. And he has an update for us. Travis, what's going on?
Okay, well, to make it very quick, I'm going to make it as quick as I can for time consideration here. This happened about 4 nights ago, and it happened to my mother, who is living back over at my grandmother's house. To be very quick, my mother has always been the type that has been very sensitive to people being mean to each other, people being mean to animals, people, et cetera, et cetera. And she can't develop that hard shell that maybe I have, or maybe you have, or your viewers or listeners have. And there's a reason why I'm adding this into this story. What has happened is, as I said before, my grandmother went to live with my aunt in 2005 because my grandmother's health is kind of failing. She's 86 years old, you know. So to make a long story short, what has happened is my mother is, sadly enough, even though she'll never admit it, she is a hoarder. Now, nothing on the lines of, like, those shows, Hoarders, you know, where you walk in and there's, like, garbage clear, like, to the
right.
ceiling.
Right.
Nothing like that. So don't even. No. And what has happened is she has kind of done that to my grandmother's house. And a few nights ago, and the reason why I say this is because I talked to her, and probably your audience is wondering why we are having so many incidents with what we think is my grandfather. And I asked her if I could tell the story, and she said yes. And I said, you know, I'm going to have to tell Jim Harold the reason why we think this is happening. There's a long pause, and she goes, do you really have to? I said, yeah. I said, I can't keep talking about things that are going on over there and not telling the reason anymore. And there's a long pause, and she goes, well, okay, I guess. I said, now you're sure? She goes, yeah, that's okay. Okay, so to make a long story short, she was in her bedroom over at the house, and she like me, we like our doors closed. Okay, we like our doors closed, and she fell asleep with the light on. And she had this dream, and it was my grandfather. And he looked like he did in the coffin when he passed away in 1982, very thin, gaunt, suit that was too loose for him. And he had opened the door, and he was looking in the bedroom where she is.
Right.
And there is a lot of stuff in there, like a hoarder. And he's looking around. My mom said he's looking around like, what is all of this? And she's calling him because, like I said, for some reason, my family, we call each other by our first names. I call my mother by her first name.
Right.
She called, yeah. And she's calling his name, and she's going, I'm over here. I'm over here. And he is not even, he's looking around at the boxes and stuff like in amazement. Like, what is going on? And as she's saying, I'm over here, and he's not even acknowledging her, like she's even there. And so the dream fades. Now, this is where it gets really creepy. She wakes up, and yes, folks, the door to the bedroom is opened the exact same spot where he opened it in her dreams.
Oh, my.
And I said, are you sure you closed? She said, yes. She was very upset, terribly upset. And she said, this was very disturbing. And my mother would not use that kind of word, disturbing, like that. So I said, well, are you trying to say that what you saw wasn't a dream and that he maybe did open the door? And she goes, I don't know. I don't know what's going on over here. She goes, but I can't take much more of this. And that's it. That's the story. We're thinking that we don't know what's going on. But I do know that if he were alive today, I would have to say that he would not believe in the term hoarder. He would think a good butt kicking is in, would be sufficient. Anyway, to make a long story short, yes, that's what happened. And, the door was open, and she said, I closed the door, and it was open just enough, just like in her dream. She goes, I don't know if it was a dream. And one thing I want to make clear, my mother and I, we do not do any kind of alcohol, drugs of any sort.
Right.
Nothing. So, it's up to your listeners to decide. The doors don't open on their own. There isn't, and so in the dream, that's what happens. So maybe it wasn't a dream, perhaps, or maybe something happened. But I know that according to my mother, my grandfather had a very bewildered and very disgusted look as he was looking around.
Huh.
And it really shook my mom up. As a matter of fact, her and I talked about it today, and she's still very shaken up by it. And I just said, well, I don't know what to tell you, that's it. There's no chain rattling and no moaning or anything. That was that's the story. And, whether he really was looking in, we don't know. And like she said, what scared her is the way he looked. Very gaunt, and the suit that was too loose, and he looked like he didn't know where he was, she said.
Huh.
He was looking like, I don't know where I'm at. Where am I? And she's calling his name, and he didn't even acknowledge her. And she said, she's mentioned it every night since I've talked to her. That's happened. She said, I'm very disturbed by this. And I said, well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. So anyway, that was it. That's the story. I mean, that house and barn he did build. And he, in the dream, he was looking at it like, I don't believe this has happened to my house. Is this my home? What has happened here?
Right.
And, if I was in her shoes, I'd be scared too.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, so, that's it. Like I told my mom, I'm going to have to tell Mr. Harold why these things are happening with him, because they're going to start wondering, how come his grandfather is playing such a presence in there? that's it, because my mother has turned his home into a hoarder's house. And if he were alive today, he would be knocking heads together. I can assure you that.
Huh.
And so we're just wondering if maybe his ghost or spirit or whatever you want to call it is not too happy about this.
Wow.
You know? So it's up to the listener, you know, and like she said, I know the door she's talking about. The door does not swing open. Once you close it, it stays closed. It does not open. But like I said, when she woke up, it was open the exact same length as her dream when he opened it in her dream and was looking around in there. And
well,
she's still quite shaken up by it. Let's put it that way.
Well, it seems like this house is a magnet for these type of things, these strange things. And
yeah,
Travis, we really appreciate you coming on the show and keeping us up to date.
Okay, I'm trying to keep you up to date in the most real-time fashion as I can. So,
sounds good. Thanks a lot, Travis.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim, and you have a very good night.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed the campfire this week as much as I did. And also, I want to give a plug for our virtual campfire. I mentioned we were on Coast to Coast AM this last week, and a ton of people over there signed up, and I don't think I do enough to promote it. So go over to Facebook, search for my virtual campfire, Jim Harold's virtual campfire, and sign up. It's a great place to share your stories. I also hope that you'll share your story on the show. You can sign up at jimharold.com/campfire. And don't forget my other free paranormal podcast, The Paranormal Podcast, where I interview authors and experts on all matter of the supernatural. I thank you so much for tuning in. I hope that you're going to have a great Halloween season. Here we go. Please tell a friend about all of the shows, and we'll talk to you next time. As always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.